Season 6, Episode 7, Check Bouncer, opens up with Sipowicz and Sorensen going to a, looks like a gift shop, where an older couple was beaten and robbed. The police officer lets them know that they're doing pretty bad. It looks like the wife's going to go out, and that shakes Sorensen a little bit. They got a neighbor who said she saw two black gentlemen. She uses the word colored, which, you know, not super cool. She says that they have the baggy clothes like they all wear, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I was wearing baggy clothes at around this time.
I wore baggy pants in middle school.
They take out the elderly couple, and they look, you know, the woman looks pretty bad. And when they talk to the elderly man, he's doing the classic old man. They didn't need to hurt anybody. They could have just taken my money. It would have been fine. They didn't have to do this to her. He asked them just to take care of his wife and let him go to her. And Sorensen leans in and he's like, "We're gonna get these guys for you," like real badass. Sorensen watches the couple get into the ambulance, and then he kind of just lingers on it a bit. Then he walks into the gift shop. That's the beginning of this episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. They come back from the crime scene. When Sorensen and Sipowicz walk in, they're greeted by Leslie Peach, who is played by Mos Def, slash Simbe, as he's known now.
And changed his name.
I mean, he's a famous face. He's been in a bunch of shit, made a bunch of music. A lot of people know him.
He was in a very underrated movie.
Be Kind Rewind?
Jack Black, Be Kind Rewind.
It's a funny movie. He's upset, and he's, you know, in turmoil about this incident that occurred, which is the old people getting beat up. He says he's got a heavy feeling on his chest, mentions that he sells apples. What happens if he doesn't sell apples anymore? And Sipowicz makes a crack about Johnny Appleseed. And he gives up Delray Williams and Terry Tate, said that he heard it down the way, and the old people were always nice to him, giving him credit on stuff that he needed. And Sipowicz was like, "Did they know?" Implying that maybe he stole it, to which Leslie Peach says something really cool, where he says, "You know, you're a very irritable person, but I forgive you." And I was like, that's awesome. Taking the high road with Sipowicz.
They have a good chemistry, Mos Def and Sipowicz.
They play off each other very, very well. And he gives Mos Def's Leslie Peach, well, Yasiim Bey Mos Def's Leslie Peach, he gives, like, a straw paper with Delroy Williams' grandmother's address on it, which was weird. He gives it to Sorensen, then congratulates him on the promotion. He then says to Sipowicz, "And I know who Johnny Appleseed is, man." And then he tries to go out the side door, which is always locked. And Sipowicz is like, "Well, you know that door's locked, man." And then he's like, "Okay, smarty clown." And I was like, well, it's kind of ruined. It kind of ruined the character with such a terrible insult. Smarty clown.
Oh no, dude! I think that gives it. I think that gives his character something. He knows who Johnny Appleseed is, but he doesn't know the phrase "silly clown" or "smarty pants." Like, it's fun. It's just like it adds to him a little bit. It's kind of funny.
It kind of bums me out.
He's a junkie. Yeah, he's just like a junkie informant.
And it bums me out that knowing that we're not going to see him as much as we're going to see some other Sorensen informants.
I know, right? Like not to, like, he doesn't really spoil anything, but I wish that he did more.
Yeah.
Was involved more. He would have been a good character to add to the show.
I wonder if he got a job or something, and they couldn't get him or something. Sipowicz cracks on Danny Sorensen for his informants just walking up to him, and Danny just cuts him off, saying, like, "Let's go run this for the boss, and then go get this asshole, Delray." Because, yeah, he gives up the names Delray and Terry. When we get up to the squad, Fancy's looking around for something, and Kirkendall's like, "You need help, boss?" And he's like, "Yeah, we got a DOA at a strip club called the Gentleman's Hour." And he's like, "Okay. Our job is to catch homicides, so why aren't you giving it to us? Because it's Jill and Kirkendall. Not Jill and Kirkendall. Jill and Russell. And he's like, yeah, the Martinez and Medavoy are at court, I guess. So I guess you guys will have to take it. It's the gentleman's club. Or the gentleman's hour. Also, while they're talking about it, John shows up to fill in for Dolores. Which is awesome, because...
I'm trying to remember, was he nervous to give them that, or was he just flustered because, like, there was no PAA? I'm trying to remember that scene.
Well, he doesn't really comment on the lack of PAA or anything. I thought he was kind of flustered and a little blustery because it was a strip club and he didn't want to send the female detectives for some reason. I just have that feeling that he was like, oh, I want to send the dudes over there. I don't want to send Russell and Kirkendall, but they're the only option.
Wouldn't it be better to send women to a strip club than men?
I don't know. I didn't understand what he was frustrated about. I assumed it was because he'd rather Medavoy and Martinez do it, but...
Unless, like, Kirkendall and Russell are attracted to women, then it may not be a good idea to send them over there, but if it was just, like... Especially with the way that we've seen how these detectives and male police officers work when it comes to women, it seems like it would be better to send two women over to the strip club than any men.
I also thought for like half a second, like just half a second, that maybe Fancy knew Dolores worked there, and he didn't want to send the women for fear of judgment.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler alert for the episode, but like...
You just casually throw out a huge story point.
Because I was sitting there, like, wondering, after watching it the second time, I was like, why is he so weird about getting somebody to do it? And I was like, maybe he knows Dolores is there? Like, I don't know why he was.
See, I didn't take it as him being weird. I took it as him being a little flustered and, like, not being able to get everything straight because... there was no PAA at the front desk. And so I thought that he was having, like, not a rough morning, but, like, there wasn't someone there to, like, do what there was, the little things that normally get done, and for him to be able to just, like, casually go in and do his job. I didn't think that he knew. I don't think anyone knew anything about who was at the strip club. All right. That's just what I got from the scene, yeah.
And, I like I mentioned, John Irving comes in to replace Dolores for the morning, and has a little moment with Jill and Diane, and he's stoked to be there because he loves the precinct, and we're just waiting with bated breath till he gets in because he's just rad.
Well, this is kind of like an NYPD blue staple. This is what they do. This is how they introduce. They slowly let you know that, like, this is going to be a character that's going to come back somehow. And this is the beginning. This is like the slow feeding of letting us know that John's on his way.
John's coming in. The detective teams cross each other as Russell and Kirkendall leave. They exchange good mornings. It seems like Russell isn't going to be on Danny's dick all day today like she was last time.
Yo, she was mad crazy.
They mention to both of them, they're like, oh, we got a DOA at a strip club. And Sipwitz goes, which one? He says, oh, the gentleman's hour. He's like, that one must have opened recently.
That's kind of funny.
Sipwitz introduces John to Danny Sorensen.
He makes jokes like that, though, all the time. Like, they'll be like, oh, we got to go to this pub. And he'll be like, oh, that's over on the, like, First in Lexington or something, you know? Like, he, like, knows where, like, certain bars are or certain, like, after-hour joints are. It's really funny.
He introduces John to Danny, and then John kind of kicks his leg up to shake his hand, and Sipwitz is like, oh, what a fairy boy, like in his face for some fucking reason. And then
before we move on, we have to just get a straw poll from the hosts. Uh-huh. Do we think Sipwitz is homophobic?
Homophobic. Kind of.
God, you walked that line, you little bitch.
He's kind of. I would say he's kind of.
Is this what BLM was talking about when they say be an ally?
Okay, the point is,
no, it's not. Like, we need to call what it is.
Well,
he's homophobic.
Well, I don't think he's dealt with a lot of homosexuals, so he doesn't understand.
This is what I have to say to that. Fuck that. He was a police detective in New York during the 80s. He dealt with a few share of homosexuals.
Look, I think the point is, Kyle, that...
And the precinct that he's in, I think, if it's supposed to match life in New York, I think he's dealt with some homosexuals in his life.
I think that his relationship with John is what smooths over those issues. So I think for the show, right now, he is a little homophobic, but we know that he's going to work on that, as well as other things that come up in this episode about Sipowicz. Then there's kind of a moment where John gives, like, a lingering look at Danny Sorensen, which was like,
Not to sound homophobic, but that was a weird, like, I don't recall John, like, saying, Danny gives me, like, Bobby vibes, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything like that, or Danny gives me, like, a calming vibe to this. It's just, like, it's a weird, awkward stare, and then it moves on.
Especially because we know he was 100% down to bone Simone. He wanted a Simone bone.
I mean, I guess it's fine. Like, I awkwardly stare at people and then move on, so...
should we go in order? We should probably... Because this is the point when the cases split off and then have nothing to do with each other until the very end, so... I'll continue with Sorensen and Sipowicz. They bring in Del Rey... Del Rey tells Sipowicz and Sorensen that he was at his grandma's, even though his grandma was at the senior center. That doesn't make any sense. His entire account for the day was, I was at my grandmother's even though she wasn't there. And Sipowicz and Sorensen get pissy. Sipowicz says that he loves those Abbott Costello routines. He says, well, can you tell us where Terry Tate is? And he's like, who? He's like, Terry Tate, the guy you've done a couple callers with. And he goes, oh, Terry. He's like, yeah, that Terry douchebag. Now where is he? And he's like, he's not...
I love when Sorensen tries to get tough.
Yeah, because he kind of looks like a baby man.
A baby man.
And then he gets all up in his face, like, you think I won't pull that shade down? And
I think Ricky Schroeds would appreciate it if you called him a man baby.
Well, Kyle, all I know is...
let's put the man before the baby.
All I know about Ricky Schroeder, I can't tread on him. Anyway.
Neither will the entertainment industry. Because this motherfucker can't get a real job.
And he basically threatens to beat this guy up, which is like, okay, this is the episode where we have to find out that Danny's a little hard, even though he's not.
He's a hothead. It's a little hot.
Because he's been crying ever since he saw these old people. He says something like, if you want me to hit on you, that cocky smile's going to be down around your knees. And it's like, okay. Whatever.
That was a good impression, Kirk.
Thank you. He says that...
How many episodes is Ricky Schroeder and NYPD Blue?
I have no idea, but a lot.
It's going to be like 200 episodes just talking about how big of an asshole he is. So, I hope you're not going to get annoyed by it.
Oh, man. Delroy Lindo. He tells him that Terry Tate is, he's seeing his baby mama, or he's playing basketball outside of where he lives. And he's like, and it ain't no big deal me telling you that, because we didn't do anything. So then Danny throws him to the ground and says, you think I'm going to let you kill a woman and just get away with it? So he gives up that the woman died.
I hope not.
And Sipowicz gets out of the room with him, and he's like, it's okay, you gave up some information. He's like, I don't do that, Sipowicz, I don't do that. And then he kind of pouts,
he loses it. Like, his self-esteem is shot.
He pouts and runs to his desk to put office supplies in his pockets.
Quick break, quick break. okay, you can cut this out if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have? We never get an explanation on why he does that shit, right?
No, I think that's just an anxiety thing. It's just like when he doesn't feel in control, he's like, I have to get office supplies and put them in my pockets. Like,
it's like an OCD thing, first of all.
Yeah, which is also anxiety disorder.
Yeah, but like, I wonder why they never like explain more like why he does it. It would have been nice to know.
Sibowitz asks, like, do we have enough office supplies to get out there and get this other guy? Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, says the guy who collects frogs. Like, chill out.
He has two frogs on his desk, Kyle. Does that make him a frog guy?
More frogs than I've ever had on my desk.
They go to a basketball court, and Danny's like, we need to set up a little drama here, guys. Sipowicz, you toss that guy to get their attention. And he's like, yes, sir. Detective Sorensen.
Yeah, this was really weird. Like, this whole thing was really weird to me. This whole setup.
And then he's like, yo, Medavoy Martinez, you go hassle those guys over there, and then I'm gonna pick up Terry. So it just seems like everybody gets super distracted by what's going on, and then Danny rolls up to Terry, which he could have just done, and was like, hey, Terry, you wanna go to the precinct and talk about this? And Terry's like, it's game point, man. He's like, okay, take your shot. And then Terry shoots it, and he makes it. And then everybody starts cheering on the court, and you've played more pickup basketball than I have, Kyle.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a point where they just start cheering the name of a guy who's playing in a pickup basketball game? Because that seemed very weird.
Not that I know of.
Cause
like, I don't remember there being cheering in pickup basketball.
Because he makes it, and they literally just start going, Terry, Terry, and it's like, that. I don't think that would ever happen.
Well, because the Popo is fucking with him, so, you know.
The Popo.
No, I've never, that's the only cheering that I've ever, like, really seen in, like, a pickup basketball game was when I played at this Mormon league. and we were playing these, like, older dudes, and their, like, wives and kids were, like, cheering for them, like, legit cheering for them, like, it mattered.
After Terry gives the game-winning shot, they bring Terry up to the house, and Terry's talking about the basketball lockout, which Sipowicz is like, oh, yeah, I don't talk about that. The idea of those rich hoopers without a job gets me upset.
And there we go. There goes the ignorance of the white man again. not every basketball player makes millions of dollars.
It's not guaranteed.
That's why they have to have, like, a union, so, like, they make sure that the people that are at the lowest end don't get forgotten because they don't have millions of dollars.
When they get to a interrogation room, well, before they get to the interrogation room, Terry is asking who's going to take control on this one, and Sorensen is. When they get in the room and sit down, Sorensen makes a stupid joke where he's like, you know what happens when I got a case and I got two perps in the precinct? I call my wife and tell her I'll be home for dinner.
Oh, yeah, this stupid fucking monologue. Oh, my God.
Yeah, after Sorensen. After Sorensen makes up that stupid wife crack, he tries to separate Terry from Del Rey, saying, like, look, if you want to go in getting... He also just subtly drops, if you want to get raped in prison while your B-boys think that you beat up an old woman, that's fine by me.
Yeah, it comes in a little hot.
and he starts breaking down, too. He starts crying.
Sorensen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's crying at the desk. And, yeah, I think, did I write down the quote? He's like, maybe you don't have a problem getting raped, having boys think that you beat up old people. That's not the whole quote, but he just said, maybe you don't have a problem being raped. And it's like, okay, well, okay. Well, coming down.
I mean, I'm not 100% okay with it.
The truth is, if he's 100% not cool, if he's 100% okay with it and has no problem, then it's not rape anymore.
Oh, very true. Very true.
It's all about perspective.
Good point.
He then says, I gotta think something out. And Sipowicz is like, you don't really seem like the violent type. And he's like, I'm not the hurtful type. He's like, I gotta think about my own value system. and then they give him the room, and then they edit. Like, the edit is the very next scene is Sorensen going back in. So I'm assuming there was a commercial break to give time.
I hope so. But that kid does a good job.
Yeah,
I like that kid and how he was acting.
The actor's name was, I think it's Danny Johnson? Did I write that down correctly? I have it up here, hold on. Yeah, Danny Johnson.
Yeah, he did a good job.
I thought maybe I recognized him from something, and I didn't, because the only thing that I saw that I knew but haven't seen was Daredevil. Apparently he's on the Daredevil TV show.
I watched the first two seasons of that. I don't remember him.
Because, yeah, the next scene, Sipowicz and Sorensen are waiting in silence until Sorensen gets up and walks to Terry and talks to him alone. And then Terry goes over the whole situation very teary-eyed, I guess. He's crying. He said nobody was going in there to hurt anybody. We're both decent people. And maybe I pissed off Del Rey by saying we shouldn't go in there. And the old man immediately thought we were going to rob him, so he grabbed Del Rey's arm. After his wife came in and said, don't hurt anybody, just take the money. He then just starts beating on them after he knocks the woman to the ground. He then calls the woman he said the woman acted like the weakest squirrel, which I thought was weird. Like, that's a weird animal to choose.
Yeah, especially, like, has he seen a lot of weak squirrels, you know?
Are squirrels notoriously weak in, like, Central Park or something? They got a weak squirrel problem out there?
I don't know, Kirk. You have first-hand experience with a squirrel.
We don't need to talk about that, Kyle. We don't need to bring up the past. It's like Nam. You weren't there.
No, I'm just saying, if anyone has, like...
squirrel knowledge?
It'd be you right now. You're the Squirrel King. That's actually the fourth season of True Detective right there.
Squirrel King?
Squirrel King.
In the conversation with Terry, he says that Del Rey was kicking what he did. Like, he kept hurting them because he was so upset that he had started hurting them.
Has that ever happened to you? Where you've, like, hurt someone and then you've gotten so mad that you had to keep on hurting them?
You know, my lawyers have told me to not talk about those situations anymore. Because of, possible legal recourse. Yeah, I've been told by my lawyer not to mention it anymore. But I don't understand it. And once Danny Sorensen says, that the woman died, Terry breaks down even harder and says, oh my god, what did I do? And he says, I take my equal responsibility and ask God to forgive him.
Fair enough. I don't know, like, other than, like, the kid is admitting to what's going on, that he was there, blah, 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 and what else can he do? But, like, leave it up to the judge. It's a little sad, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's kind of a bummer. It feels like he gives off that performance that it makes you feel like he never wanted any bad to happen.
So, the next scene with them, Sipowicz is feeding fish, and Sorensen comes out and says that he went for it, then asks, do we go at Del Rey? And Sipowicz just seems to start talking about fish, talking about how the inner workings of the fish tank, and then he looks at Sorensen, he's like, do you understand what I'm saying? And he's like, not completely, and he's like, you kept your head in there in that interview, and you kept a healthy tank. Because this scene is kind of important in a weird way, where Sipowicz is making the point, like, okay, you'll make mistakes, but if you keep a healthy tank, you'll get through it. So if you adjust and make good decisions, you'll fix it. And what's weird is, right after he says that, Danny's like, well, you adjusted too. And he said, my various shortcomings, I know how to handle a tank. And then right after he does that, Sipowicz says, you can close Del Rey while I talk to Dornan, because Dornan walks in, who is played by Richard Gant, who was in The Big Lebowski. I didn't mention another huge movie he was in, Norbit. Never saw it, but he's in it.
Norbit.
those times. Anyway, there is an ADR line where it's very weird, because Sorensen says, I'll catch him in my net, and then he looks at Sipowicz, and Sipowicz in ADR says, don't crack wise about fish. And then Sorensen says, "No offense." And I was like, it would have been better if he just said "no offense" after Sipowicz looked at him. He didn't need to say "don't crack wise about fish."
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. That whole scene is weird to me.
I think we'll skip over what he talks about with Dornan. We'll come around to that towards the end after the stripper story. Sorensen tells Del Rey, like, this is a test for me. Like, I really want to just let... Basically, he's like, I want to beat your head in and then let somebody murder you. But I can't because that would cost me my job. So I have to let you know that if you don't give a record, you're definitely going to die. So then he's like, yeah, so Terry and I went in there, but Terry's the one that did all the violence. And then he's like, do you know what corroboration is, douchebag? He's like, you just said that you were there, and that's all I need. And he's like, yeah, I said I was there, but I wasn't doing it. He's like, well, a jury will decide. He's like, well, what about what I say? And he's like, yeah, you keep to that. I want you to look as bad as you are, and then locks him up and leaves. You mentioned it. It's all these scenes are trying to, like, and it'll be even cemented by the very last couple scenes, but they're all trying to make Sorensen look not vulnerable, but empathetic and very involved emotionally, and also that he can get hard when he needs to. Like, Sorensen can go hard if he needs to go hard, but he also cares maybe a little too much. But since it's Ricky Schroeder, and since we just watched Simone do that effortlessly, like the day he walked in, it's kind of like clown shoes.
A little bit, yeah.
And also the other story in this episode really doesn't help, because I think the other story is filled with kind of terrible actors and really shitty setup.
What are you talking about? The other story's great.
Yeah, okay, we disagree. Russell and Kirkendall Russell and Kirkendall go to the gentleman's hour, where the manager comes right up to him and is super helpful. And I wrote he's probably on coke before realizing what he's actually on. He points them to Tina/Misty after saying that nobody was allowed to leave except for one girl who didn't see anything. He's like, Tina, Misty knows who she is, or knows the guy. He's like, is Tina her real name or Misty her real name? He's like, Tina is the real name that she gave me. So, could not be the real name.
Yeah, that's interesting.
She says, I met the dude 2 weeks ago. He just would make it rain on me to do all types of dumb shit, like sit with him and dance in front of him naked. And she's acting like a real bitch about the fact that this dude died because he was paying for her college classes and all of this free shit. She then asks, can I go to the bathroom? And Jill just says, can you show me where the John is? And she's like, what, so you can watch me pass? And it was like, no, because I also need to use the fucking restroom. So they go to the restroom, and then I wrote the cokehead, who is the bartender, not the bartender, the strip club owner.
Manager
was like, who do you want to talk to next? And then Russell was like, well, we're going to have to talk to all of them, so how about we talk to the woman that gave you the finger? Because there's a woman DJ who gave the manager the finger, but didn't she give him, like, the ring finger?
I think so, because I don't think you can show the finger on TV.
Because when I looked at it, I was like, that's not the right finger, you dumbo. Like, what?
I mean, Kirk, you could rewind it.
Yeah, but I'm not going to, because I hated these scenes. Kirkendall walks into the bathroom, and there's a stripper on the ground looking at one of the stalls. And Tina was like, what are you doing? It looks like you're laying an egg. Like, and it's like, fuck off. And Kirkendall figures out that somebody is in the stall. So she's like, use the men's room and tell my partner to come in here. Kirkendall gets real hard with the person hiding in the bathroom.
Kirkendall gets really badass really quickly sometimes. Like, she gets there real quick and it's like, boop, here we go.
Here we are. Time to crack some skulls. She also is like, kind of... open. She's kind of warming, yet also like, I'm gonna straight up murder you. Because she says, I can think of 1,000 reasons you're willing to hide, but there's no reason to, there's not a reason to get shot for it. Eventually, the door opens, and it's Dolores crying in her purple underwear.
Is it underwear? Is it underwear, or is it a uniform?
I mean, that depends on your perspective, Kyle.
Because if I'm not supposed to shame her, it's a job, so it's her uniform.
I mean, we'd have to talk to strippers, people in the sex work industry, because
Fair enough.
Because isn't it still underwear, even if it's a part of your uniform?
Like, see, I don't know. This is a industry I don't know about.
All right, so strippers who listen to the podcast, I know there's a huge group of you. Just let us know. Do you call it underwear or just the uniform?
Oh, definitely. Like, I know there's a ton of strippers that right before they have to go out there and they want help to feel sexy.
They listen to us.
They put us on. And listen to us talk about a show from the 90s with a bunch of old fat white men in it. For sure.
They're like, I'm just not feeling sexy tonight. It's like, oh, listen to season 4, episode 3 of NYPD Blue Balls. That'll get you there.
We're going to rock the stripper community because we're bringing awareness.
Also, I don't know how, there's at least one that strips to our podcast. She comes out to the pole and dances to our conversation about NYPD Blue. It's just the truth. It's a very weird podcast-specific strip club. And the stripper that uses our audio goes on Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Before she goes on stage, the DJ's like, coming to the stage now to rustle your feathers. Give it up for Diane.
Oh, god damn it. Oh, god. Anyway.
Oh, man.
They're talking to Dolores in the bathroom. She's like, did you know I went out with the DOA? And they're like, oh. Like, it's almost like they, like she's telling them information they did not even ask for.
Yeah, she's kind of an idiot. But that's like, a different day.
She's like, I went
that's
out with
that's not her. A different day. We've known for a while that she's an idiot.
She's like, I went out with him once, and they're like, oh, you did? And he's like, yeah, he paid me a bunch of money to sit there and talk about having good natural breasts while he played with himself. It's like, you didn't need to tell us what he did.
And for a second, I was like, what boobs?
Oh, rude. Fucking rude. You piece of shit. You misogynist piece of shit. Wow. That's a horrible
thing. Are you talking about another woman's body right now?
Kyle, that's a really horrible thing to say to that 12-year-old boy. Anyway,
No, it's all jokes, guys. It's all jokes. I don't want to be canceled, you know?
Oh, my God. What's really stupid is they let her go. They're like, Dolores, how about you just go? And she could have just left in silence.
They know where she lives. Like, they have all of her info, for fuck's sake. Like, she's a PAA for, like, the police department. Like, they can let her go. I think they'll be alright.
And instead of just leaving in silence, she's like, I'm not ashamed about what I'm doing, okay? It's not my ballerina career, but you can't make $250 a shift doing that. And then Russell, because she's just like, okay, fine, I'll bite. Why are you here at 10 o'clock in the morning? Why did you call out sick? And Dolores is like, God, I just get so bored at the station house with people being appreciative of me helping them. And it's like...
Right? Like, what?
I like to think that she was just, like, flustered and frustrated, and she just blurted out something stupid. Because that doesn't make any sense.
I didn't understand that.
So she gets her shit and starts leaving. The meth head manager's like, Crystal, I thought you left. And she's just like, I'm going home. And then Misty / Tina was like, can I go home too? And they're like, no, we still have to talk to you. And she's like, don't I have a say? And then Russell's like, no, you gotta stay here and talk with us. And she said, do you have the curse? And then Russell responds with, have you have a lot of money invested in your teeth? Like, it was just like, I'm gonna kick your fucking ass! Like, it was like, Jesus Christ. It's getting a little rowdy in here.
Yeah, she came at him hard. She comes at him again hard. This episode needs to be entitled Hard.
Kirkendall was like, Russell, I'll talk to her. Tina, over here. So she grabs Tina, and then Russell's like, I guess I'll talk to the other strippers. And this other stripper walks up and is like, can I just talk to you so I can leave? And Russell's like, yeah, we don't want to keep your dealer waiting, you junkie bitch. Like, it was just like, okay, goddamn.
Got a date with a needle?
So then Russell sits down with her, and she's like, talk to Todd. And she's like, oh, where's he standing? He's like, no, he used to work here, used to be a bouncer, does meth, so does the manager, and he
okay,
was...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but, like, can we come up with better names for these people?
Yeah, the names are pretty bad.
Like, we didn't try this time. Crystal, Todd, Tina, like, it's just so boring.
She also mentions the manager's name, which was so not interesting, I forgot to write it down. Oh, Dave.
Fuck, like, Wendy's.
She says that Todd used to date Tina. She says, she's like, Dave uses meth too. That's probably why he didn't give him up so quickly. So she says, thank you, Sissy, which she didn't get her name at the beginning, so that means she got her name earlier. She got the name of all of the strippers earlier. And then when that stripper was like, can I just tell you what I know? She's like, okay, you junkie. You gotta get out of here to go use. You gotta go score. And I was like, okay, now that you give me information, I'll treat you like a person and use your name. And Sissy is like, don't tell him who you got it from. Actually do. Who cares? I'm going to quit this job anyway. She goes up to Tina, who's getting the nice rundown by Kirkendall. And then Russell's like, maybe it's his dog track buddies, because the dude who was shot used to gamble. She says, did he go to the dog track with Todd? And then the look on her face, I was like, this woman's a bad actress. Because she was like, who? And like, it was like, fuck you, you're so bad. And she says, yeah, Todd, the guy who was in love with you before he quit this job. And then she's like, great, that's just great. Now two people are going to die because of me. And I was like, okay, is he dramatic too? And she's like, you'll see. And I was like, Jesus Christ. It's like someone told her you're a big deal in this episode. She's like, I'm going to milk every second of it. And I was like, you're not that good though.
Oh, yeah, she's, like, so overacting.
The next time we see the strip club, Metavoice and Martinez showed up for some reason. And Tina is on the phone with Todd and is lying about being arrested. And so he's going to come down to hopefully save her. And Metavoice and Martinez are like, so we're going to wait for him. You need any help? Need any help otherwise? And she's like, well, we need help interviews. And then Metavoice is like, we're glad to help. I'd love to talk to half-naked women.
Yeah, because Metavoy, ain't getting any, and he's not, visiting his kids, so.
He wants to make some more kids with some strippers.
Da-da-da-da. What a poor, sad life for Metavoy.
The next scene that they cut to, the same place, so it just transitions back to the same place we were. There's a hilarious moment with the bartender where he's like, so I talk to you like you're a bartender? And they're like, you are the bartender.
This guy's kind of an idiot, but it's good. He plays a good idiot.
Todd comes in looking for Tina. Dave is like, I can't 86 you today, Todd. I can't 86 anybody. And he walks up to Tina and just sits with her. And he's like, can we go to Florida?
I got the money. Are we going to talk about this famous face?
Yeah, Brian Thompson.
Yeah, he was in Joe Dirt.
He was also in Cobra.
I don't give a fuck about any of that. He was in motherfucking Joe Dirt.
He was also in The Terminator. This dude has been in a bunch of shit.
Yeah, he's great.
He's also the only part of this story that I liked as an actor. Because he's playing a meth head very well.
Come on, Tina!
Tina! And then
Let's get out of here!
And then he's like, can we walk out of here? Or do I have to take other means? Because I got a gun, Tina. And she's like, you have a gun? He's like, what, do you think I want to go to Florida with you and just watch you do meth all day? So he gets arrested by the four detectives, and then Tina starts crying against the wall. Like, he would have taken care of me. And I was like, God, I'm so glad you're out of this episode.
Yeah, she was trash. But I guess, like, that was the whole point. She was supposed to be.
Yeah, she was a trash human. The next scene, they show Todd tweaking in the interrogation room. And then Russell and Kirkendall just play a quick game where they're like, we're not going to get credit for this. Ballistics is going to, even though we did all the work. And Kirkendall is doing, like, a very odd, helpless girl routine that, with her voice and just her demeanor, was very weird. I don't know why.
Because it seems like he's really into, like, soft-spoken girls and, like, girls who are play the victim and need help.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I think she's trying to, like, do that so they can get him on this on their side.
I got why she did it. I think what's weird is just hearing her voice and seeing her do that, because she hasn't really done that at all.
Oh, okay, well, fuck you too, dude.
like, because her and Russell play the whole, like, we're not even going to get credit for this. This is bullshit.
Because it sounded like you didn't get it.
I got it, but
fuck
I...
you too.
Whatever. But then Todd kind of, like, he kind of, like, adjusts, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to make your day.
Was he Jim Bob from fucking South Park?
You're talking about Ned. You're talking about Ned.
Whatever.
God damn it, Kyle.
Sounded like...
Show some respect. He was killed by Man Bear Pig, okay?
Oh, that's right. That's why I was about to say I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, it's bullshit. They killed off Ned. Man Bear Pig did it. Because we have to admit that Man Bear Pig is real. Oh my god. No, he really... Like, this Todd dude got really weird. And, like, there was a part where he got closer to Kirkendall's face, which was like, okay. And he's like...
Yeah, dude, he was just feeling himself.
And then he's like, I'm gonna do you guys a favor. I killed that guy. And I'm gonna confess it to you personally. But he also did a really funny part where he's like... Did you kill, like, his name was, like, Russ or something? I can't remember. And he's like, oh, that's his name? I thought his name was Midget Dick. I thought his name was the Angry Inch. And I was like, what the fuck? It's so funny. Oh, my God.
He brings it in his interrogation scene.
He brought it so hard. I thought it was Midget Dick. Thought it was the Angry Urge. I was like, God, did you smoke all the meth before you came into that strip club?
The answer to that question is yes.
110%. The last scene is Russell and Dolores. Not Russell and Dolores. Kirkendall and Russell are talking about the case, and Russell asks, what did you put for Dolores? And she said, Crystal, last name, don't know. Danny comes
that's
in.
Cool of them. That's pretty cool of them.
Yeah, it's sweet. Because Dolores even mentioned, is like, I would hope you don't go to personnel and get me fired for this. And I was like, I don't know why they would.
Yeah, and why would you get... Well, maybe because you're supposed to be at work, but you called out.
Yeah, and this is coming from detectives who, like, anytime they have a personal issue, they just run to fancy, personal time! And then they're gone for 2 days. Like...
Yeah. I'm out of here.
Where it's just like, I need personal time.
Cap, I gotta go take care of something.
Danny comes in and he's shaken up by what's happened with the two guys. Russell and Kirkendall break the ice about talking shit about Dolores, which in theory, Sorensen has no idea what the fuck they're talking about. They just see them talking shit about somebody.
Yeah.
So it was like very weird.
He's just walking into the situation.
And so he just pipes in with a completely different topic, which is, so Sipowicz seems to have a handle on all this stuff, huh? And then Kirkendall starts talking shit about Andy, and Russell joins in, where he's like, yeah, we call Andy the Buddha. And then Russell's like, yeah, we touch his tummy in the morning so he can rub off.
Well, it's what, his, like, second episode?
And then he says, like, yeah, my guy went and provided corroboration, so, looks like he's going down. They're like, yeah, that's all you need. And he's like, anyways, I got a date. And then he leaves, and Kirkendall and Russell...
Brag.
Yeah, I guess. Kirkendall and Russell said, they say, like, oh, he takes it to heart. It looks like he'll be good. And then Kirkendall's like, I was about to tell him, don't stay out too late, because he looks like a child. And the one scene that I haven't mentioned yet, because it's going to play directly into the scene after this, Sipowicz talks to Dornan, who, if you remember from earlier, Sylvia thinks that a client of hers confessed to a crime they didn't actually do to cover for a drug dealer.
And wants Andy to find out for him.
and wants Andy to find wants Andy to talk to the arresting detective to see his impressions. And they didn't have a good first talk because the guy just mentions, by the way, Sipowicz, you were pretty fucking racist a couple of years ago in front of me, and that's why I don't trust you. So,
which, you know, is fine.
Which is fair. So when Dornan shows up again in this episode, they go back into the coffee room. Well, Dornan asks, like, hey, can I talk to you real quick? And he's like, and Sipowicz says, are we going to have another frank exchange of views? It's like, I don't know why you're offended. Don't know why you can be offended. You ask for a favor.
Exactly.
You're asking a favor of someone who doesn't know you, as far as you know. Turns out they do know you in the worst way possible. So they go into the room.
Yeah, that's funny. That's a good way to put it.
It's like, because I think the whole point, and I didn't say it in that episode, they have this meeting, and it's like, hey, we're both cops. Cop to cop. Let me know. What's up? And then Dornan's like, you don't even know me, but I know you. And I know not to trust you, or people like you, a.k.a. racists. So, no. Like, we're not having this conversation. I don't really care. So...
when and then Sipowicz is offended by that.
And then Sipowicz is like, are we going to have another exchange of views? And it was like, what the fuck? Why are you pissed off? And then when they walk in, he says, look, no apologies. And I'm not changing my view on the case. And I'm not changing my views on trusting you. And then Sipowicz is like, oh, so we can cancel the Blood Brother ceremony? And it's like, listen to the fucking dude. He doesn't have to be here.
He could also, like, listen to what you're saying. Like, like, you sound like an idiot.
And he's like, I've been going over it in my mind, and I think your wife might have something. And then he's like, really? You don't think he did it? He's like, look, I'm not saying he shouldn't be locked up. And then they both jerk each other off with the, like, look, if you don't arrest him for this, there's a thousand things he could have done. And it's like,
yeah,
great.
That old racist logic.
That old shitty logic period of just... If we didn't get him on this, we could have gotten him for something else. For all we know, he stole gum once. He says Suarez gave it up too easily without any remorse, which is not usually how it works. People can give it up easily, but show some kind of remorse, and he didn't show any. So your wife might be right. It might be worth another look. So then Sipowicz, like, kind of, you know, nods his head, and he goes, you're a good cop, Dornan. And then Dornan's like, oh, now I know it's true. And I was like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that comeback. I like when people give Sipowicz shit and he's not able to say anything back.
That's important to mention because the scene after they Russell Kirkendall and Danny, we cut to Sipowicz going home and he notices that Theo is not there. So he knocks on the bathroom door and Sylvia's in there who's clearly been crying. And Andy doesn't pick up on it, which makes me think he's like a little autistic sometimes. Like he doesn't read rooms when he's excited to tell somebody something. And he's like, where's Theo? He's like, Theo's at my father's. He's like, are we doing something today? And she's like, no, I just took him to my father's, Andy. He's like, I gotta tell you about Dornan. He came back and he let me know there might be something about your case. And then she comes out of the bathroom and she's clearly like, I don't give a fuck. And he doesn't read the room and he's like, you know how those people are when it comes to trusting us. Or, because I actually quoted it, you know how them people are with their difficulty trusting us.
With their trust issues, yeah, yeah.
And he says you could reopen the case. And then she just goes, Suarez is dead, he got shanked in the laundry room.
What? Blood out!
And he's like, what? She's like, yeah, I'm going to interview people in Rikers Island on it. And he's like, I'm sorry I didn't get this to you sooner. And he's like, well, Andy, you know how them people are. And it was like, dude! It was just so rad. It was simple.
She's done that before, though.
Well, it's also a good moment, not just for Sylvia checking him on his racism. It was a good moment because Sipowicz literally has a situation where he had come to terms with the things he had done in his past and actually apologized and changed for them. This Dornan dude may have left that conversation, that first conversation, and then called him, like, the same day. Or Dornan would have just talked to him right then and talked it out. But because he acted so resistant to what he had done in his own past and was an asshole about everything, Dornan gave it up to him too late. And he says, oh, well, it's that guy's fault. It's like, no, it's kind of your fault. that you have these preconceived notions about black people, and now this dude is dead because of how you think about black people. So it's kind of your fault.
For sure.
The last scene of the episode, or as I like to call it, where the booty been, because we haven't seen any soft core in NYPD Blue for a while.
Where the booty been?
Because it just opens on booty. It opens on lady ass. It pulls... The camera pulls out right after Danny did.
Funny.
and Danny is...
That's pretty funny.
Danny is laying with this woman naked. They're both naked, intertwined and whatnot. Danny and her, you know, they're it's some post-coital cuddling, I guess you'd call it. And she's like, Danny, remember how I said I wanted to keep it casual and just date? He's like, yeah, I remember really liking that, and smiles at her. And she's like, well... And when you hear that well, you're like, let me guess, you caught some feelings, didn't you? Now
I'm a psycho bitch. It's like a Casey Kasem letter.
All those Casey Kasem...
Dear Casey, I just want to let Danny know that I know I told you I wanted to be just friends and not have a fucking title, but all along... I was lying. I want to control your every move and scream and yell at you like a lunatic.
Well, she's like, well, I just wanted to let you know that if it does go to the next level, I'm okay with that. And he's like, cool. And she's like, so you want to go to the next level?
He's like, good game. High five.
Time to get some water.
Want to get a slice?
Good game, coach. Slapped her on the ass. But she's like, so do you want to move to the next level? And he's like, so you're cool with moving to the next level? He's like, no, I'm glad you're being honest. She wanted a defining the relationship while naked in his bed, or in her bed, actually, because he fucking leaves.
Shocker that, like, after she, like, you know, gave up some puss, she wants to, like, be in a relationship.
After she gave up a little slice of pussy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, after she, like, you know, did this vulnerable act with this man and has been open with him and, like, wants to start, wants to start a relationship. Weird.
And after she's clearly not happy with that response, he just starts putting on his clothes.
Yeah, dude, he just starts bailing.
And then she's like, well, you don't want to do that. And he's like, I can't remember exactly what he says. I didn't write it because I was just laughing at this fucking scene. But he was just like, Nadine, you know, I was happy with what we were doing. He puts all of his clothes back on and she's like, because she made... Oh, fuck, I wish I remembered exactly what she said, or what he said. Because she makes the point, like, oh, so, there's enough time for you to go out to the bars. Cool. Like, yeah, great. I want to talk.
We're just friends.
We're just friends that occasionally bump our genitals together.
This was the whole point of, like, just being fuck buddies.
She's like, well, you got laid, and now it's time to leave. And then he sits down, he's like, I came over here tonight because I wanted to be with somebody good. Because you're a good person, Nadine. And I was like, gaslight much? What the fuck does that mean? Like, hey, you're a good person, so me being a shitty person is totally okay. And
well, yeah.
And then he kisses her on the lower back, which is apparently like, I don't know, sends shivers down her spine. And he's like, look, when we go out to the movies... And yeah, that's right. Because after he's like... Because it was so insane. He's like, look, I wanted to be with you because you're a good person. I need to be with a good person tonight. You're a good person. And then he kisses her, and then he stands up. He's like, and when we're at the movies on Friday, and you just want to enjoy the night, I'm not going to bring up some bullshit. Like, he just, like, throws it back in her face. like... When you're enjoying yourself, when you're having your nice salad, before the dinner. I'm not going to bring up bullshit that you won't want to have to deal with. Because now, all of a sudden, it's weird. And I just wanted to get laid.
All I wanted to do was fuck and then go get a drink. And now here we are.
And she's like, I'm busy Friday night. And he goes, okay, some other time then. And then he's about to leave and she's like, I'm free Saturday though, I'm free Saturday. And he's like, okay.
And then he goes home and goes, got her.
Got it. And he's like, okay, I'll pick you up around 8. And he leaves. And that's how the episode ends. It ends with like this passive-aggressive bullshit that like was just an excuse to get people naked, really. It was like, we need some side boob and ass in this episode immediately.
And it also had to show you that he's a bastard man.
he's a bastard man. Any other thoughts on this episode? I will just say this. I did not enjoy this very much. After watching it 3 times, I was like, this is not a good episode to be Danny Sorensen's second episode in as a character.
The only thing that I just get really stoked every time the dude from fucking Joe Dirt comes on.
The dude from Joe Dirt. He has a name. That name is Brian Thompson. He was also in Cobra and The Terminator, but yes. He was the main villain in Cobra, and he was hilarious, but... anything else about the episode?
No, I'm with you. Like, it's a very weird episode for it to be your first, or like your second introduction to it, but whatever. They tried.
It also, I mean, I don't know if you agree with this, it's also edited very weird. It cuts away from scenes and then cuts back to the exact same place. When usually in NYPD Blue they'd cut back and forth, which I think helps with time of the episode.
Makes me wonder if there's like missing stuff missing, or if we're watching another edited version again.
It also, like, the Medavoy Martinez of it all is so weird, how like in the beginning of the episode they're not there, then they suddenly show up to help out Sipowicz and Sorensen, and then they're suddenly super interested to help out the stripper one. It was odd.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
And just some bad acting choices, I think, by certain people, but, you know, that's NYPD Blue. Sometimes they do good, sometimes they don't.
Sometimes they feel like a nut, and sometimes they don't.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast. We are on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast.
We have an Instagram?
We do, and we also have a Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. And the episodes are coming out every other Tuesday. Later, everybody. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show, whether you like it or not, on any of the platforms that you could use to listen to it. It's how people see the show. It gets into the algorithm, and hopefully more people watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. It is currently on Hulu, but it's important to note that they have the syndicated version of each episode, which means the special episodes, the ones that are about an hour and such, those have been edited. So if you want the full thing, you got to get them on DVDs, because I'm pretty sure it's not on Amazon currently, at least right now. If you have a desire to read about NYPD Blue, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. There is True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons from creators and consultants. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, which I think is 99 cents. A steal. So thanks again for listening. Hopefully you're wearing a mask if you're not vaccinated. Hopefully you're getting vaccinated if you can. And we can get back out there and, you know, start living again. Have a good one. Peace. And hope to catch you.
We tweet?
We mostly just tweet when new episodes are out and tweet back when a couple people occasionally message us. It's interesting that you mentioned Mark Paul Gosselaar, or we mentioned him. One of our listeners is is going to have a chance to meet Mark Paul Gosselaar somewhere. And he's like, do you want me to ask if he's ever heard of the show? Or his opinion on our show. And I said, I think it'd be hilarious to mention it when we're not even close to his episodes. We're nowhere near any MPG episodes of NYPD Blue. And I should have mentioned, could you tell him that the girlfriend of one of the hosts loves fucking Saved by the Bell.
If that guy is listening and still hasn't met him yet, if you really want to convey something to him from us, my thing would be like, let him know that he's way better than Ricky Schroeder.
just a heads up, Mark Paul.
Let him know if you were to rank Sipowicz's partners, it would go Simone, him, then the red-haired dude, and then Schroeder.
Then the red-haired dude who we don't even remember his name. David Caruso.
Caruso. But he's better than Ricky. He's top. He's the second best Sipowicz partner, so he's got that going for him.
I gotta rewatch all the Sorensons, but just based on these two episodes, I think you are correct.